It's Wednesday, October 20th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 209 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
And that's it. Chad is out tonight because his truck has broke down, so he's trying to get that taken care of. I'm sorry, broken down, I guess would be the...
It could be broke down. We're from Missouri.
So
if his trailer home gets, hit by a tornado and his dog dies, then we can write a country song about him.
Who are you and why are you talking?
I don't know. Chad's not here, so I can actually speak.
We have to play the hand we are dealt, so with the three of us, let us push on, almighty warriors. Wayne, first off, Matt Vansel was on this show. We interviewed him about his Gamers, the Darkness Rising, and some other things a while back, and he now has a web series that's come out.
Yep, he talked about it quite a bit when we were doing that interview. The concept being he's got a lot of the actors from Gamers to Darkness Rising, and they put together to do this fantasy series that's essentially, it's a lot of what they did in Gamers 2 Darkness Rising without the gaming aspect of it. There's no people sitting around tables. This is just the fantasy part. And as of right now, they have the first 4 or 5 episodes of it out, and I've been enjoying this quite a bit. It's funny, it has a lot of the humor, but without the slapstick aspect, and the production value of it's pretty good.
I'll be sure to put a link to this in the show notes. So if you are interested in checking out what Matt Vansel's up to right now, then be sure to get there and look at that. And also, let's go ahead and do something a little bit more selfish here and plug something that one of us is working on. So Wayne, I'll pass it right back to you again.
Wow, I talk a lot when Chad's not here.
So do most of us.
I'm very happy to say that at this point, I am over 20,000 words published of the Skies of Glass Metropolis fiction on skiesofglass.com. I've been at this now for 5 or 6 months. There are 20 episodes of it out so far, each one ranging somewhere from 700 words to, I think 1,400 was the largest, averaging out to right now, I think I'm at 22,000 words, and I'm not quite halfway through yet. My goal is still, when this is all done, a PDF novel out of it, and I think I'm right on par because every time I think I get near the end of a part, a new scene comes up that I didn't expect. Which is kind of odd since I'm the one writing it, but it keeps happening to me. It's been exciting getting the feedback, too. So if anyone's reading this, I love hearing back from you, and particularly when someone got frustrated at one of the cliffhanger endings. That made my week to know that someone was reading it and on the edge of their seats, and I cliffhangered them, and they were cussing at me for it. I loved it.
Nothing makes me happier than being cussed out. So, yeah, if you want to check that out, you can see what Wayne's up to at skiesofglass.com, and there may be some more stuff coming to that site soon, but I don't know for sure yet, so we'll just hold that announcement off. So there's something that we have not done in over 100 episodes.
Hookers and blow?
Oh, hell. It's not even been 100 minutes. Then I'm not even talking about letting Pat talk.
Wow.
We have not put out a resource document.
I don't even know what you're talking about as there's a resource document. That's how long it's been.
They're the kind of thing that Chad keeps talking about putting out there for his rule system. He was going to post that out there, but
Chad,
it hasn't happened.
Chad never takes notes. Chad doesn't write anything down.
Actually,
I don't know who you're talking about.
Now that I think about it, I don't think we have released a resource document since either of you have been on the show.
No, I'm pretty sure you haven't.
I know you haven't since I've been on the show.
Yeah. And I don't think we have since Pat has either. There's something that came up after the last episode, which is I talked about my what's really going on document last show. Mm-hmm. And once again, a couple of people asked me, one on the forums and some in email and such, to see one of these what's really going on documents.
Did you do what you usually do to me and just completely ignore the question? Because I've asked you that 3 or 4 times and you ignore me.
No, these are important people. The fans are a real critical part of the show. I mean, this wouldn't be what it is without them. So no, I have to actually deal with their existence.
You just don't know how to properly motivate him, Wayne.
And so I've got to thinking about, it's like, there's been several times in this show where we've talked about our different GMing styles, and I have outlined in one show in a fair amount of detail how I set up my game notes, and a couple people have asked me for them, and I've never produced them, so I've finally broken down, found some that I'm willing to release, and so I'm going to post some examples with this episode of how I structure my game notes. These will be game notes from an actual, since we've been stuck on this IP this episode, it's on an actual Skies of Glass game that I ran. This was actually Wayne's first game. And what you're going to see out there is 3 documents. The first of which is the infamous What's Really Going On document. This is a document that maps out the overarching plot that is going to be played out across the campaign. This is the setup for what's occurring out in the world that the players are going to begin oblivious to, learn more about, and eventually end up affecting. And something that should be noted about that document is you will notice that it lacks a lot of detail, and that is intentional. Because if there are specifics about how something's going to go down, that's plot information for a game I'll be running later. This is just supposed to be high-level information to help me write a game. It is not meant to help me run a game. The second document is an NPC document. And all this is a simple little chart, NPC name, quick explanation of who they are, appearance, personality, and while it won't be in this example, in some games I will also put notes on little schemes of their own they may have going, just to help me track who's out there.
You know what I add to that that sounds like you don't, Dan? I add a few phrases that these people have said. It may not be a phrase that I have them do in-game, but like when I ran the Skies of Glass game at Fear the Con, because that's the only game we're going to be talking about today is Skies of Glass game, it sounds like. For each NPC I had, I did exactly what you're describing. I had the character name, I had a description of them, but I had a phrase they would say that I didn't necessarily use in-game.
Sort of mnemonic for you, I guess?
Yes. Okay. So when I would get to that part where the NPC was at, I would read that real quick, and that would get me their voice in my head, so I could do that voice to talk to them.
That's not a bad idea. I've never done that, but actually, you know what that harkens back to in my mind is the old Transformers stat cards that used to be on the back of the boxes, because each one of them had a little motto or slogan that was meant to encapsulate typically a relatively shallow personality.
Awesome. You had to have the little red piece of plastic to read their stats, even though you could really read it without it, but it you know, popped out.
The blue line was not real hard to see.
Yeah, and the red squiggles.
Yeah, and the red squiggles, but nonetheless.
Those were great days.
And something else I do with that document is I also tend to leave some empty blanks at the bottom, so that way if they go into town and take a sudden interest in a particular smith or something, I can doodle his information in by hand and then keep that consistent the next time they come to the town, that guy will still have the same name and same general appearance. So if I print this correctly, you will see some empty boxes which are meant to be filled in on the fly. The third document, and I'll put out two examples of these because they come in sort of two varieties, which is the actual plot notes I will use to run the game. And you will notice that in the first game plot, there's a lot of stuff scripted. And that's because of the fact that I know I have to set a scene. I have to get the action moving. The players have all come with their characters, but everyone kind of has to get past that comfort level, break the ice a little, figure out what it is they're supposed to be doing. And so you see a lot of scripting in the first plot line. And then the first plot line just kind of will seem to stop. And that's because that's the point I've reached where I now know what's really going on. I know how the scene was set up, but I don't know their characters well enough to necessarily know how they're going to react. So instead, I will just have some notes trailing off the end of that that kind of just jogs my memory about what everyone's up to and what might happen to see how the players are going to handle it. If you look at the second set of plot notes I put out, you will see that these are going to be much more plug and play. They are descriptive of abstract plot elements. They are not scripted. And so it's meant so that these are just kind of the things I want to occur and some little memory joggers about how those might go down, but they will not be in some chronological order with quotation marks around them. It's just going to be these kind of general notes. But when I go to a game, I will typically have with me about 5 printed pages. The one page of what's really going on, which I only keep in hand, so if they take me completely off the ranch, I can try and put it back in perspective mentally. About 2 pages of NPCs, pure reference document. I only look at it if they go to an NPC and I don't remember who he is. And then the only thing I'm actually working off of is about 2 pages of plot outline.
You know, I'm excited to see this because even after we did that episode where I had asked you what you put in your notes, I still have no idea what you put in your notes. You put the basic, this is what I need to have, but I want to see what that looks like because I struggle for what will I actually find useful. So I want to see other people's notes to get ideas for what they find useful to kind of play around with it. And because we never finished that first campaign, I'm dying to see the this is what's really going on document.
Well, and skimming the notes that I'm probably going to put up, there's 2 sets I'm contemplating. And the one I was looking at today, I think, does a pretty good job of illustrating a lot of the concepts that we've talked about in this show. And there was something that Dave said when he was a guest host a while back, and he was absolutely right, that it is real easy to sit on the mics and pontificate about gaming concepts, but it's a different level of practice of our trade to actually get out there and apply that advice, to show, to break out this old chestnut where the rubber hits the road. So instead of talking about how I write game notes, to actually show you, these are some game notes I've used. Here's how we really use the ideas that we have. And I think these represent a pretty good balance that I've reached for enabling my style of GMing, where I want the notes, I want the detail, I want the consistency, but at the same time, I don't want to walk into a game with a binder full of information where every time anyone wants to do anything, I have to flip through and skim notes for 30 minutes before I can give them a one-line reply. Check the show notes, and even if there's not a direct link in the show notes, just go to feartheboot.com, click on the resources tab, and skipping forward, once again, over 100 episodes, I think it's somewhere around 120, 130 episodes, there will be resource documents again. So, moving on. This past Sunday, we were having a conversation, ironically, based on what the topic is, during a lull in the game. The conversation was about pacing.
Mm-hmm. Pat, you wouldn't know this conversation. You were upstairs.
That's right.
Interrupting our pacing.
Yes. Things happen. Mistakes were made. What can I say?
Mistakes were made.
I don't know. It's just,
are you going to play this back to Connor on his fifth birthday?
No.
All right. So obviously we've mentioned on the show, and it's been on the Twitter feed and such, that Pat and Beth recently had a baby.
Yep.
And as a result, Pat has requested that it would help him if for at least a while we were to do our Sunday games at his house. And we have a relatively isolated place in the basement where we can, you know, close the door and go down there. We're not constantly being pestered. So it's a good gaming environment. But at the same time, if Beth or the kids or whatever need his attention, he is accessible to go upstairs and resolve it and, you know, to be of some help there, which being mature adults and good friends and whatnot and doing the things that I hope all of you guys are doing for each other. We said, yes, we will absolutely do what we can to accommodate this and relocate to his house. But one of the, I'll say consequences, and I'll use consequences very loosely here of this logical result of this is that these interruptions occur because that's why we're there. So they can occur.
Yeah.
So this created some breaks in the pacing where we would be in the middle of some role playing or have a scene going on. And right as somebody's about to say something, Pat would get called upstairs and, you know, he'd have to take off for a few minutes, which left Chad Wayne and I sitting down there discussing the concept of pacing within a game. To finish framing how we're going to approach this topic, I want to look at pacing from two angles. I had originally written this in the notes for this episode as micro pacing and macro pacing, but I really don't think that's accurate because while it was nice to have a little one word title for each one, the truth is either of these can occur at the micro or macro level. With my catchphrases thrown out the window, I guess we're just going to have to call this pacing type one and pacing type two. So pacing type one is the one we were dealing with on Sunday, which I describe as the ebb and flow of emotional or intellectual engagement. And this is something that is easily metered by whether people are on one extreme sitting on the edge of their seat or on the opposite extreme playing with their iPhones and completely checked out. But in this type of pacing, what I had originally called the micro pacing, but I think you can see this ebb and flow on the macro level as well, because you can have entire down games or down months. But this is simply, are people at the moment excited and invested emotionally or intellectually in what's going on? Are they charged up and trying to go after the problem? And of course, the break on Sunday was we'd get kind of sort of into this flow and then something would occur, which would call Pat away. Not that that's the only thing that could cause this. There's many things that could cause this, but that was just our issue on Sunday.
Sudden bladder explosions or phone calls. That's one thing we've had before is where I work, we have an on-call rotation. You know, we've had to stop games before because of a work call. Right at the perfect moment, something happens. Get the call, have to pause. We've had that problem recording here before, actually, too.
And I know, like, you know, in our situation on Sunday, in the times that I would voluntarily go up, not per se called in an emergency manner, if I was going to go check on something, what I always try to do as a player is if the scene does not involve me or maybe, you know, maybe I'm not integral in the scene, then I feel like I can slip away and go do what I need to do. You know, I try not to do it when it's going to be something that's dependent upon me doing something. And on the flip side of that, what I am completely fine with as a player, and I think that players should take on this responsibility, is that I feel that if I slip away, I usually will say, you guys keep going on without me. I'll just catch back up as soon as I get back. Because if it's something where you can keep going, and unless you just need my input about it, we'll just say that my character was kind of in the background while I was gone. And then when I come back in, I will disrupt it as little as I can to figure out what's going on and get right back into it. And that's what I try to do.
Isn't it hard to stay hooked into the story like that, though? It'd be like watching TV and having to constantly run out to the kitchen or run outside. You're missing key points and you're trying to piece it together.
Yeah.
But
if you do it a lot, absolutely. I mean, if it's one of the things where every 5 minutes you're getting up and going away, then yeah, I think that's an extreme case. Because like in our game, I think I probably left maybe 3 times. Maybe it was more. And one of those times I know it was right where I was needing to do something because Chad was interacting with me, and unfortunately, Beth called me away. But the other times it was more like, you know, you guys were doing something. I was in another part of the city doing something else. It wasn't focused on me. So yeah, I can slip away because technically my character won't even know what you guys are doing anyway because I'm not with you, you know, and that's a lot easier. But yeah, in your case, Wayne, that would be totally disruptive. And I mean, it would be very hard to do. So
that was one of the analogies that we used when discussing it while you were absent was it's something like Wayne said, imagine if you're watching a movie and you get 5 minutes into some really intense scene. I don't know. There's a lot of character development or there's a big ship on ship fight or something. And then you pause it and you don't just go to the bathroom. But you walk away for a week and then come back. You're out of the moment. That moment's kind of been taken away. And I think in a role-playing game, it's easier to lose that in a hurry because of the fact that it's your moment. Part of the beauty of playing a role-playing game is the fact that you are not a passive observer. You are a part of that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're building up and your character's getting intense and all stuff's happening and you're on the edge of your seat and then somebody has to go take a work call while they're taking care of the baby and taking a dump all at once, then all of a sudden it's really hard to kind of...
That's impressive. I could do a few of those things at a time, but not all of them.
Pretty much don't want to take care of a baby and take a dump at the same time.
Work call and doing it, though, I A-okay.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's...
You know, that's going to be hard for the GM, too. I mean, because that's one of the things the GM has to do is get this flow right. And if something keeps interrupting the game, whatever it may be, I mean,
oh, yes,
it's been any number of things, it gets a little bit demoralizing. Chad told us at one point that he's like, I really thought about calling the game. I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to keep going. And to his credit, he just kept going and he worked out and we were able to finish this chapter of the campaign.
As the chairman of the National Game Mastering Party, yes, straight up, it is very demoralizing because as a game master, you are already on the hot seat. There is more expected of you, not even just in preparation, but in delivery, than is expected of the players. I mean, you are really expected to bring entertainment in a way that the players are not in most groups expected to bring. I'm not saying that the players are just passive receivers, but I am saying that in that balance of things, the game master is kind of expected to bring 70-30. And when you are bringing your A game, you're really on it, and something you can't control, and I'm not even saying it's an unreasonable thing. We're not by any stretch of the imagination harshly judging the reasons that Pat had to walk away at this game or anyone has to walk away from any game. But it is very frustrating when things beyond your control keep breaking that flow that you worked so hard to create in the first place.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why when I was running a con game at Fear the Con, I was nervous the time we did a bathroom break or when someone had to run get a drink or something. Because at that point, to me, when everyone comes back, everyone's looking at me, ready for me to start it again and get that flow going again. Being my first con game, I wasn't prepared to do that. I didn't expect that to happen.
But see, that's why it's important in situations like that to not stop, to not break that flow unless you just absolutely have to. Like I said, if you're just talking about one player, especially in a con game, I mean, if they're one player of 5 or 6 that's going to step away because they want to go get a drink or something, hey, you know what? That's their choice. You're just going to miss a little bit of this because we're rolling on. I don't want to interrupt this flow. And that's like what I said. I want you guys to do that. Like if I step away, if I just got to run upstairs and go to the bathroom, I have to check something real quick. I'm going to be gone for a minute or two. I don't expect for you guys to stop for me.
Right.
It's very nice that you do. And it's a common courtesy, but I think it's better to keep going.
Well,
keep
it also means
going. You know what? Hey, it's like for me, it's like going to any movie. I can't sit down through a 2-hour movie without going to the bathroom at least once. And I know you can't either, Wayne. You're worse than I am.
That's the hilarious thing is it may not necessarily be that people are pausing to give you know, you respect or anything. No, it may be like when one of us says, you know, okay, that scene's done, I'm not in the next scene, I'm running to the bathroom. Everyone takes a break because everyone was sitting there waiting to pee and no one wanted to get up.
Well, that's true.
Because no one wanted to be that guy.
Well, and that I think actually is a good point of courtesy, that just as Pat has said, one bit of advice here is as best as you can, keep the scene going. Similar to that, if it's possible to time when you leave, do it when you're not the center of attention or you're not in the middle of the scene. Wayne, continuing off that, as you're suggesting now, it is also another bit of common courtesy, if at all possible, do it all at once. If somebody's already saying, look, I got to go upstairs to get a drink or I need to go to the bathroom, whatever you want to take care of or think you may need to take care of within the next hour, do it then as well.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing worse than having four people and each one is leaving at 10-minute intervals. And that's something that you as a player can really do. On the GM side, if you know that a player's leaving, sometimes it's not possible to continue the scene because they could all be sitting together at a banquet. And if one of them leaves, it kind of wrecks the entire scene. But if you have something going on where you are role-playing with one guy and he takes off and the other characters were not present, you need to improv something. Switch the plot. Okay, over on your guy's side of town, let's talk what's going on over there. Let's keep it going so at least the people who are still here can stay invested in the moment and we'll pick it up again when the other guy comes back. But the angle we've been approaching this from here is that it's player caused. But sometimes I will peg this clearly back on poor storytelling or delivery by the game master. Games need fast points and slow points. They need fast points to build excitement and to accentuate the plot. But they also need slow points so you have a breather and a chance to gather your wits or deal with your character or role player, whatever you want to do. And I have been in games where the game master just really hasn't gotten a good feel for balancing the fast and slow points. The plot is either so fast that it becomes tiresome and tedious, or it is so slow that no form of suicide sounds unattractive.
You know, it's one of those things I've seen in some video games. I've very rarely seen it in role-playing games, thankfully. And I think it's just a lucky thing for me, is when it gets to the point where you've got so much thrown at you that you're just, okay, if I can just make it past this, I can rest. And you're looking forward to that downtime as a chance to just relax because you're so overwhelmed by everything. And I haven't really seen that happen much in role-playing. I mean, I've seen it a few times where we just want to get this done and then we can take time to gather our thoughts and then something else hits us and then something else hits us to keep us on the run.
I've actually seen that in my longstanding campaigns, and not necessarily in a single adventure or a single session as much as we have just spent the last, say, 4 or 5 sessions or maybe a couple months on this really intense adventure, this intense story. And it's been, you know, highs and lows, real emotional, this side or the other. And it's just really taken out of us. So once that one comes to a conclusion, we go back and then, okay, that was really heavy. Now let's do something a little bit more light. Or you request that. So I say, hey, GM, how about the next adventure we go on is something a little bit more of a light fare that's more just fun and not quite so heady. And so I've definitely experienced that kind of a thing in role playing. And I think it's neat. I think that's necessary.
It's just basic storytelling. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my serial fiction, that's one of the things I notice. I'll have really big weeks, and sometimes there'll be really big weeks in a row where there's all this stuff that happens. For the story to continue and for anyone to care about the characters, after some of those big weeks, I need the slower weeks. I need to let them deal with it. Otherwise, whatever just happened doesn't have any character development whatsoever.
I think it's somewhat human nature that when you're the storyteller, you want to keep things exploding. You want to keep them on the edge of their seat constantly. But the truth is, I don't think that's what, at least speaking for myself, I as a player always want. The slow points really help give context to the fast points. And it also gives me an opportunity to deal with things I can't do while I'm in a car chase.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I can't role play out something with Pat. I can't figure out what I'm going to do to finish this robot I've been trying to build. And there's all these things I just can't do while something's blowing up. And I really think what the game master has to do is just learn how to read your players. And even if you're no good at reading them, then at least learn how to communicate. Learn how to tell each other, hey, quick check, where are we at? You know what, dude, we could really use a down game to resolve some of these projects we got going on. Or you know what, to be honest, things have been a little bit slow this past game. Get back from where they're at and just be willing to change your stuff around to meet them where they want to be.
I think this this sort of, I'll call it an ebb and flow of the storytelling, as you mentioned, Wayne, is a really key part of this. And I think it's something that could be kind of tricky. And it is something that you want to strive for in the good storytelling. Because like you said, Dan, if you just cram explosion after explosion or big thing after big thing on your players, it's going to desensitize them in a way. And it's also not going to allow them the chance to process what just happened or for it to really sink in unless they have that period of a downtime to sort of reflect on it and let it, you know, sort of really let it sink in. But also, like, I like what you said, Dan, because it's not just a storytelling standpoint from the GM's side of crafting a good story. It's also, you know, the player input. I agree. I think you should definitely talk to your players and see what they think about it. You know, that's just good advice. And it's back to the whole communication issue that we've talked and talked about.
You know, along those lines, as a very, very novice GM, for me, sometimes I want to have those, give those opportunities, but you never know what the players are going to do, especially if you're not running for a group that you normally run for. You know, you may be setting up for this downtime and they get it in their head that, okay, we're going to go, we're going to move, we're going to react now. And sometimes it's hard to get that flow if you don't know what they're going to do.
In my mind, I think that would make it a little bit easier on the GM, because if they do that, that's obvious that that's what they want. And that's not even, you don't even have to ask them for it. They've told you, they've communicated with you, I'm ready for more action. Actually, it might be harder for them to communicate to you the need to slow down, because if you're throwing it at them constantly, it's because what do I do in a situation where you as a GM are just constantly foisting this upon me other than to just keep rolling with it?
You take it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I have to do. You know, on the flip side, though, because like you said, as a player, when it's my initiative and I'm like, yeah, I'm ready for more action, that is what I can do. But on the flip side, I don't see how I do. It's like, whoa, okay, I need to take a timeout. This is too much for me. That's a situation I guess I haven't been in, or that's harder for me to react to.
Recently in our D&D game, we communicated to Chad, look, we've been on the road for the past several games. We keep getting drugged from one major encounter to the next. It would be really nice to have a couple days in town where we can just kind of heal up from some of these events and take stock of what we have and whatnot. And Chad accommodated that. We then did have several games where we kind of sat around town. It wasn't nothing was going on, but we were dealing with personal things. We were dealing with town politics. The game took on a different pace before things started blowing up again.
Mm-hmm. And that's really easy for him to do with his style, because he doesn't necessarily know what we're going to do each week.
Yeah.
He has that idea in his head. And he has, I'm not saying he hasn't thought out, he's thought out a lot, but he's really good at throwing things out there that we take as this is part of the big plot and it becomes part of the big plot, when he had no clue that we would ever ask the question.
Yeah, I will say this for Chad's style, it took me aback a little bit in the fact that, like you're saying, that everything happened so quickly, because honestly, if you look at our chapter one that we're calling it, it honestly took place over about a week.
Yeah.
In literally a physically 4 or 5 days span of time. And this is something we played how many sessions? At least 6 to 10 sessions.
Yes.
Yeah, it's taken us 2 or 3 months to play.
This
at
was
least.
One of the few games I've played where the real lifetime elapsed was greater than the game time elapsed. Yeah.
By a lot.
And what really threw it in there, and again, this is because Chad doesn't necessarily like D&D, but that's the one that we wanted to play. When it really sunk in for me is the fact that I'm trying to play in this mechanic of you deplete your spells, you have to rememorize them, or you have to heal up somewhat. And we were literally going from one fight to the next. I think there was at least one day where we didn't sleep in more than a 24-hour period of time. Yeah. I'm like, I have to rest. I'm playing a magic user. I don't have spells anymore, and I can't rememorize them unless you let me rest. And it's sort of because of that, though, I like the way we've kind of transformed this setting of, yes, we're using D&D for some of the mechanical roles, but we're doing a little bit of hand waving here and there, and we're looking at things a little bit differently. And I kind of like that. So
it was a very interesting pace. It seems like I had no idea this wasn't a normal D&D pace until we brought in a new player and he sat there and we mentioned something about needing to heal up. He's like, need to heal up? What have you guys been doing? Like,
yeah.
Not resting.
Yeah.
The other kind of pacing that I want to talk about, just as I had previously called the first kind micro pacing, I'd call this macro pacing. And here I think the name is perhaps a little bit more appropriate, is the ebb and flow of the story arc. And by this, I mean the planned starts and stops and the revealing of the campaign. That basically when the game master sits down and says, okay, how do I want to tell the story? Where will a plot begin and where will it end? And I came up with, I think there are categorically three basic approaches for this. And I'm sure you could probably throw in some little nuances or whatnot that may draw out some subtypes. But I think these three categories are pretty good for describing the play styles of at least the vast majority of gamers out there. The first is the type which I have traditionally used in most of my games, which is the unbroken campaign. When you guys start out on the first sitting, there is some kind of a major plot that is in the works. Now, there may be subplots along the way, and there may be pauses where you guys have a little bit of rest time or travel time or whatnot, but you are going to be pursuing this one plot line towards an ultimate climax over the course of a very long amount of time. And after that climax is reached, and then we've gone through an epilogue and conclusion, the campaign is done. I could possibly come up with more if you guys are enjoying that campaign a whole lot, but really it is not the story that I originally intended to tell anymore. That story is over. The second one is what we are doing with our current game, which is to instead break it into chapters. You are going to have these very long arcs, but there are distinct and planned breaks in the action between them. So we may sit down and play one chapter for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, but it is intended that there will be some kind of closure to the action, maybe not total closure, but there will be some kind of closure to the action, some kind of passage of time, some kind of pause in the characters' lives, to where if you had to, you could put the campaign down and come back to it later, or put it down and walk away forever, and you would feel like you did something meaningful. Maybe there's some unresolved plot points, but it's not like you accomplished nothing.
You know, I really like this concept too, because we've had that problem of finishing a complete campaign. And at this point, we finished chapter one. I have that sense of completion. We're continuing on, but if we didn't, I would still have that sense of completion. And I think taking it in smaller chunks, for whatever reason, we've had a lot of these distractions, and this has allowed us to take on a larger campaign, just not all at once.
I think something else this has done for us, and not necessarily that I'm championing the chapter method of storytelling, because I think all three of these are perfectly valid. But I think one way in which it has helped us currently is it's made it seem more bite-sized. That because of the fact we know there's a finish line ahead that's very reachable, it's not 6 months off, it's maybe just 2 or 3 sittings off, it has kept us going and kept us committed and kept us coming back to reach that point of conclusion.
This method got us through most of the major game killers that have been talked about in previous episodes. Loss of a player, gain of a player, breaks between, interruptions in games.
Major life changes.
Major life, yeah.
Holidays. I mean, yeah, here comes the real killer, though, of Christmas. We're about to enter into the game killing season. Santa bears no love for your gaming hobby, and he is coming soon with a vengeance.
Every one of those hit, except for Christmas isn't here yet, but every one of those hit, and the game survived it. The game took some heavy hits, but we all just kept keeping in mind, hey, we're almost to the end of this chapter. We just make it through this chapter, and we've completed it.
You know what else has been kind of interesting for me is I believe, as best as I can recall, this may be the first, or if it's not the first, it's one of the very few games in my entire gaming history I've played that had this structure. I mean, I've always known the structure was possible, but I believe this is one of the first times I've actually attempted it. Now, something that I have done, I've both played in and GM'd, is this third kind, which is sort of the opposite extreme from the Unbroken campaign, which is the episodic game, where you have short plots that are intended to be resolved in a very small number of sittings. 1, 2, 3, maybe at most 4 sittings. It is intended, you get a call from Starfleet, you go out and investigate the distress signal, you figure out what's going on, and within a matter of a couple sittings, this has been completely resolved. That doesn't mean the entire campaign is over. That doesn't mean you have to ditch your characters. I mean, you could pick them up, quite frankly, the very next week. It's just a new plot.
This is what I actually call classic campaigning, let's call it that. And by that, I mean, this harkens back to the days of like modules,
exactly.
Running modules. You start role-playing with your buddies, you roll up some characters, and you throw modules at each other. And then you evolve beyond modules. As a GM, you grow, and you start making your own adventures. Like you're saying, it's not this huge plot arc that you're talking about, or even the chapters. It's just, I've got this group of adventurers that are good together, and let's just throw some stuff at them. So you do it that way. And that's actually how I started my career and did a lot of mines. You were talking about my home base there, and that's what I've done a lot of and really enjoy.
Well, and this is what's really backwards for me, is because of the fact that when I got my start with gaming, it wasn't in D&D, and I was playing games that really didn't have a lot of modules, or if they did, quite frankly, I didn't have the money to buy them. When I got my start, it was with these long campaigns. I mean, my very first game, I was GMing, and my intention was to run a long, ongoing campaign, which is exactly what we did. We had much longer attention spans as kids. You can believe
so
that.
Funny.
But
yeah.
To me, the episodic style came much later. But you're absolutely right in that, I don't know about for most groups, but within the history of gaming as a hobby, this is how it was mostly played.
Yeah.
Was exactly like you said, you would have a module, you go into the Color Animal Inn, a mysterious stranger gives you a map to a castle, you go out there, you whoop some ass, you take some treasure, you go back to the Color Animal Inn, you divide up the loot, you spend a week of whoring and drinking, and then a different mysterious stranger comes in, and then a different mysterious stranger comes in and tells you about the mysterious tomb.
And what I like about this too is that in my experience, doing this episodic style, we were able to do this in a way that sort of pulled in the other two types that you mentioned, because, and by that I mean this, even though we were doing episodes, you could go on a shorter arc of episodes that maybe, you know, comprised a big bad or sort of a major plot thing that might have taken us 6 months or maybe even a year to play through. But it was like we were doing it in individual module type settings.
Right.
So that allowed that. And I've never done a true chapter setting like Chad is doing now as well, like, because you'd mentioned that. But, you know, even that, you know, you could have some time pass and, you know, after the major adventure or whatever like that. So I think you can easily combine these three, or you can do parts of any of these three in anything that you do. I don't think you have to do either A, B, or C as you find them out. I think you can certainly do some of each.
Well, and I would definitely say that whichever one you pick, I think it is important to accept that there are going to be ups and downs. There are going to be high points to the story and then pauses in the action. I think there ought to even be pauses in time, and I'll get to why I think that here in a minute. Whichever one of these ones you're running. So these are very loose categories. And I realize that not all games may cleanly fit into one of them. But I have played in games that definitely, now having crossed chapters off the list, I have played games that did very cleanly fit into all these.
Mm-hmm.
The Unbroken campaign, where there was a mega plot that was going to take 2 years to resolve. Now the chapter one. And then the episodic one, where we did this with Transformers, we did this with Star Trek, we did this with Shadowrun. And Shadowrun, you get a call from the guy that gives you your jobs, which, for sake of anyone who's not familiar with Shadowrun, the slang phrase is a guy called a Mr. Johnson. He basically gives you a call, he offers you a job, you accept it, you go out, you do whatever it is you're supposed to do. You go home, you collect your money, some time will pass, and he's going to call you with another job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the idea of the episodic as a player in the aspect of, I always want to try something new at this point because everything is still new to me. So there hasn't been a game that I've played in that I haven't thought about asking the GM to kill my character so I can try something new halfway through the game until the current one. Every time along there's always been that idea. And I think in an episodic campaign, it would be easier to do something like that. You know, from game to game, you could potentially jump into that new player without impacting the story at all. From a GM standpoint, it would be harder for me because you're not doing as much building on the previous story. Every game would be more like a new game to me.
Reinventing the campaign almost. Yeah.
And, you know, from a player standpoint, again, I like the longer story. I like the big tie-in. I like that big completion at the end. If an episodic campaign fell apart, I wouldn't feel upset that I missed the big story like I do a campaign one. But if the episodic one completed, I don't think I'd get as much joy or sense of completion as I would have out of a campaign.
Having played all three, I really don't think I can honestly advocate one of these as being, I mean, forget even absolute words like right or wrong. I don't think I can even advocate one as being best. All of them have different advantages and disadvantages.
It seems situational based on the group that you're playing in.
Exactly. And I think that's exactly the conclusion I came to thinking about this, is that what you have to do is not predetermine that one is right, but instead pick the one that fits number one, the feel of the game you want to run. A story like Shogun, which was an excellent fictional book, very much enjoyed it, would not have worked in a series of episodes. It needed one mega plot to be told. And there are campaigns I've played in, some of which, believe it or not, we've actually finished, which is a miracle in this group. That
I'll believe it when I see it.
That went over the course of a year or 2 years or 3 years and really did follow a plot that long and finally reach an end where the credit rolls. And it was an unbelievably satisfactory feeling. And the plot got to go in deep and unexpected directions because of the fact it had time to do so. On the flip side with the episodic ones, that gives you a different feel. You can start and stop the adventures a little bit more easily. You can swap in and out plot elements or characters or whatnot much more rapidly. You can deal with turnover in players or even turnover in the GM. And it survives it much better. And of course, the chapter one falls somewhere in between.
So the more I thought about how you're describing these, you know, in our group, we seem to all want that long campaign. We want the whole story. This year has been a year of life changes. New house, new kid, job changes. Our group just doesn't seem to be in a place right now to be ready to take on that big campaign yet.
Yeah.
This is what we needed right now. After everything settles down and the life changes quit hitting all in 1 year, maybe we'll be ready to tackle that big year, 2 year campaign.
Well, and when you pretty much just covered right there, more or less, the other two things I think a group needs to look at, or a game master needs to look at when deciding which to run, which is how likely are you going to have a turnover of players? Not to say it's even an issue of personal drama or whatever, but just because life's going to keep pulling them away. And what is the availability of the entire group? For example, we've talked to a lot of folks who maybe want some continuity in their games, but because everyone's so busy, they only meet once a month, sometimes once every 6 months, once a year. And in something like that, having these little episodes or adventures, but yet being able to keep that character from time to time may help give you a sense of continuity you wouldn't otherwise get. It just makes this massive, unbroken, megalithic campaign impossible.
I wonder if that's the appeal of some of the organized play. I've seriously thought about some of that. I'm sure you guys know the names of these kind of things I'm talking about, where you pay your membership, you create your character, and you go to their events, and you can sit down in front of anyone's party. You're bringing your character each time.
Yeah, the RPGA was one of them. There's all the living stuff, and that's all been changing around. To be honest, I know of its existence. I don't keep up with it. I say as well as I should, but actually, I really don't care. So, I mean, it's good. You know what? I'm not bashing.
You have a regular group. You don't need it.
Exactly. It's good stuff. Some people really enjoy it. It is a great way to meet new people.
But Chad doesn't charge you money to run his game.
And for some people, this is also because of the fact that where they're at in life, this may be the only opportunity they get to game. Or maybe they're just sort of people that like the unexpectedness of random people showing up at a game. But it's just not what I want. I would rather have consistent ongoing plots with a group of friends I know. So as a result, I've not kept up with it because it doesn't interest me. But I think whichever one of these you pick, that when you as a game master are designing the plot, you ought to allow for little lulls in the action or passages of time. And it doesn't have to be a passage of time. That's one way of handling it. Because this will allow you to do a couple critical things. Now, with episodes, this timing's real obvious. It's the end of an episode. With a chapter, this could be the end of a chapter, but if a chapter's running 6 months, you may need one of these breaks somewhere along the way. In an unbroken campaign, you have to produce these breaks somewhere. And here's why I think they're important. First of all, it gives you an opportunity to discuss the game and see what you can do to improve things. And just as importantly, you don't just have the conversation, but if there is a lull in the action where, okay, we're going to spend a week in town just taking it easy, or we're going to spend, like in the case of our game, Chad told us the time between chapter one and chapter two is roughly a year, that a year is going to pass in the lives of our characters. This is not just a chance to discuss what we liked or didn't like about the game, which is something we did this past Sunday after chapter one ended, but this is a chance to actually fix it. Because now all of a sudden, if there's a problematic game element, we really don't like an NPC, we don't like the direction the plot's headed, this is a really good opportunity for the GM to believably deal with, okay, here's why it's not a problem anymore. In the course of that year, the NPC you really hated dropped dead from a heart attack and he's been replaced by a second in command who's not such a douche. Or, Game Master, I really don't like my character, but I know it's kind of awkward to introduce a new character in the middle of a fight. But if there's a year off, you could say, you know what? During that year, 6 months before chapter two begins, Wayne, in your travels, your character meets a guy, you guys become friends, and that's who I'm playing now. I mean, it's almost like you get a chance to kind of redevelop the group template. Anything in the game can now be believably swapped out, even if it's so necessary, the game master. If the game master is getting tired of running the game or is no longer available or has a falling out with everybody, you could stick in a new GM. Guess what? When Starfleet calls your ship with the next mission, it's just a different guy playing the voice of Starfleet Command this time. But same character, same ship, the same story goes on. Another thing that a passage of time or a pause in the plot allows you to do is to pursue pet projects. Try saying that one five times fast. But this is something that not everyone's interested in, but if you've got a proactive group or you've got characters that are really interested in finding their long-lost dad, building that robot, paying off a spaceship, developing a new spell, doing something that takes a long time to do, you've now given a believable opportunity for them to do it.
In our current game, with this break the way it is, Chad's also had us level twice during the course of this. So not only have we had a chance to do these pet projects in this year break, we do the pet projects and we come back with a, you know, character changes.
Yes, that's actually a great point, Wayne, is it helps to logically explain character advancement. It is a little bit weird that you're walking through a dungeon, you kill six goblins in a room, and while walking down the hallway to the next room, you grow 3 inches in height.
I just want to know why a goblin had a wolf on it.
Yeah, I just wonder why it goes ding whenever I advance, but hey.
But if you have this passage of time, a pause in the plot, some travel time, whatever, it's now a lot more easy to explain where you picked up a few new tricks. Something I would recommend to game masters is, in addition to looking at what's going to fit the feel of the game, the availability of your players and the availability of the group, is I would also say sometimes it helps to run your games in a different timing because of the fact that it helps you break your ruts. We've talked a lot on this show about players and game masters both benefiting from breaking these ruts, from saying, you know what, I always play a guy who's exactly like this. Maybe this campaign I'm going to play something completely different.
Is it odd that I'm actually looking forward to discovering a rut in myself? That I haven't played enough to have gotten there yet? And I hear all this, it's like, wow, I want that much experience that I have a rut that I need to break.
We'll find it eventually. You just give it a little bit longer. We'll discover what it is. You know what, game masters, just like the types of NPCs, types of plot, whatever, the way in which you tell a story is a rut. And the first time that I ran an episodic game, I believe it was a Transformers game, it was strangely liberating because it was exciting. It was like almost like rediscovering gaming because I suddenly had to sit down and tell the story in a completely different way. Not just a different setting, not just different characters, not just even different players, but now I suddenly had to tell a completely different kind of story. I had to come up with something where I could really meaningfully engage somebody and then wrap it up in the course of two or three sittings. And I was so used to slowly leaking out plot and building intrigue and adding confusion and realigning based on what they're doing and where they're going. And now all of a sudden I needed a much quicker hit. And reverse way, if all you play is modules and all you play is these quick run adventures, try running a big mega campaign. You'll challenge yourself. I mean, it will make you grow as a game master and you will experience a lot of new things and build a lot of new skills doing it.
You know, as we've talked about a lot of these, some of the things I've been thinking about is our evolving GM game that Chad instituted. And I was trying to figure out where it fits into that. And it got me thinking, one of the problems we had with it, not just a problem we had, just something that kind of bugged me, is as we handed off from GM to GM, the GM had to tell the players what they had planned, what they were doing. So the next GM would know what was going on. And it's kind of like pulling that curtain back. So when you're the player again, suddenly it makes things more difficult. I would think in one of these, you know, like kind of a episodic game, that wouldn't be as big of a deal because it's not the overarching plot that you have to give to the next person. The next person just picks up another episode. And then if the first player wants to come back, they can continue on their plot points without ever having to give it up to the other player.
Yeah, somebody calls with a different job. And what you are doing with yours and will that NPC come back again or that mysterious organization surface again? You can develop it later. And that was one thing different about the rotating GM game that we did with this group versus one, the original one that I think Chad was basing it off of, was in that one. It was actually a D&D game that was more chapter based where there were several GMs, each which had their preferred realm. And we had it worked out so we would each get to take the characters through two or three levels in our realm, at which point something would happen, an event, the gods would get angry or whatever, and they would fall through a portal into the next realm, at which point it was over. You know, you had gone from Dragonlance to Faerun, not that Dragonlance is the name of the world, but you get my point, and that's gone. It's just closed off. I mean, it's, and in this one, you're correct, Wayne, that because we didn't do an episodic style, we were trying to run an unbroken campaign with many chefs. And
I want to think that that can work. The way we tried it, it just didn't work. No. Episodic, I think that could work pretty well.
Well, I think sort of a post-critique on what we did, our experiment was essentially no GM would run more than two sessions.
Yeah.
Maybe two and a half if it just wasn't working out. I think for a group of inexperienced people trying this for the first time, that was ambitious, to say the least. Two sessions is hard to get anything done in. I mean, even if we had done it in chapters or, you know, self-contained module type episodes, it would have been better. Or maybe not. Who knows? It may have been worse. But I think the time constraint, and I understand what we were trying to do because we didn't want it to go on forever.
Right.
But I think trying to get everything done, especially for novice GMs in two settings, is hard to do. And could even be for experienced ones that are, say, used to running unbroken campaigns.
Coming up next week, we should have the Fear the Con 4 website up and ready for people to start signing up games. We'll talk more about that then. And Wayne is also working on a flyer. So anyone who's willing to get the word out by putting one up in their friendly local gaming store or bookstore or whatnot, we'll have those available as well. I hope next week. If not, then at worst, maybe the week thereafter. But the site should be completely ready to go by next week, so stay tuned for that. Once again, be sure to check the show notes and also the resource documents. I realize that's a first in a long time, but hey, there you go. And thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.